Some peasants were blocking the road up ahead. I honked the horn, but they chose not to hear. They were standing around under their pointed hats, watching a man and a woman yell at each other. When I got closer, I saw two bicycles tangled up, a busted wicker basket, and vegetables all over the road. It looked like an accident. Sergeant Binet reached over in front of me and sounded the horn again. It made a sheepish bleat, ridiculous, coming from this armor-plated truck with its camouflage paint. The peasants turned their heads, but they still didn't get out of the way. I was bearing down on them. Sergeant Binet slid low in the seat so nobody could get a look at him, which was prudent on his part, since he was probably the biggest man in this part of the province, and certainly the only black man. I kept honking the horn as I came on. The peasants held their ground longer than I thought they would, almost long enough to make me lose my nerve. Then they jumped out of the way. I could hear them shouting, and then I couldn't hear anything but the clang and grind of metal as the wheels of the truck passed over the bicycles. Awful sound. When I looked in the rear view, most of the peasants were staring after the truck while a few others inspected the wreckage in the road. Sergeant Binet sat up again. He said, without reproach, "That's a shame, sir. That's just a real shame." I didn't say anything. What could I say? I hadn't done it for fun. 7 months back, at the beginning of my tour, when I was still calling them people instead of peasants, I wouldn't have run over their bikes. I would have slowed down or even stopped until they decided to move their argument to the side of the road, if it was a real argument and not a setup. But I didn't stop anymore. Neither did Sergeant Binet. Nobody did, as these peasants, these people, should have known. We passed through a string of hamlets without further interruption. I drove fast to get an edge on the snipers, but snipers weren't the problem on this road. Mines were the problem. If I ran over a touch-fused 105 shell, it wouldn't make any difference how fast I was going. I'd seen a 2.5-ton truck blown right off the road by one of those, just a few vehicles ahead of me in a convoy coming back from Saigon. The truck jumped like a bucking horse and landed on its side in the ditch. The rest of us stopped and hit the dirt, waiting for an ambush that never came. When we finally got up and looked in the truck, there was nobody there. Nothing you could think of as a person. The two Vietnamese soldiers inside had been turned to chowder by the blast coming up through the floor of the cab. After that, I always packed sandbags under my seat and on the floorboards of anything I drove. I suspected that even the scant comfort I took from these doleful measures was illusory, but illusions kept me going, and I declined to pursue any line of thought that might put them in danger. We were all living on fantasies. There was some variation among them, but every one of us believed, instinctively, if not consciously, that he could help his chances by observing certain rites and protocols. Some of these were obvious. You kept your weapon clean, you paid attention, you didn't take risks unless you had to. But that got you only so far. Despite the promise implicit in our training, if you do everything right, you'll make it home, you couldn't help but notice that the good troops were getting killed right along with the slackers and shitbirds. It was clear that survival wasn't only a function of zero defects and combat readiness. There had to be something else to it, something unreachable by practical means. Why one man died and another lived was, in the end, a mystery, and we who lived paid court to that mystery in every way we could think of. I carried a heavy gold pocket watch given to me by my fiancée. It had belonged to her grandfather and to her father. She'd had it engraved with a verse from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. It went with me everywhere, rain or shine. That it continued to tick, I regarded as an affirmation somehow linked to my own continuance, and when it got stolen toward the end of my tour, I suffered through several days of stupefying fatalism.